Blog Talk Radio.
We start with shocking news this episode. The sponsor, Acquire. Leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions, you ask? Yes, because when you need to dig down into your talent pipeline to see which managers are performing and which, well, aren't, use Acquire Insight, the analytics tool that shines a spotlight, whether they want it or not, on your talent so you can make better workforce decisions. It's not really that shocking. I just wanted to mix it up a little bit this week. Learn more at acquireinc.com/talent.
Welcome to HR Happy Hour. My name is Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour. This is episode 102, You Can't Fire Everyone, being recorded live on Thursday, May 26, 2011. And I have to make a confession right off the top of the show. I have yet to track down our guest in the pre-show. There's a couple of folks on the line right now who just dialed in, so I'm going to have to try to figure out which one of these might be our guest, Hank. Hopefully I can figure out which one it is here in a second, but we'll get through that, no problem. So our call-in number tonight, 646-378-1086. If you're hanging out with us tonight and following the show on Twitter, our hashtag, of course, is HR Happy Hour. So some quick announcements while we get sort of organized and try to sort out where Hank is. Some thanks as well. This past week, I was down in Dallas, Texas, or Fort Worth, Texas, more accurately, at the Acquire Inc. User Conference, which was phenomenal, a great time, super show put on by Lois Melbourne, Ross Melbourne, the entire team at Acquire. I got to hang out a little bit with Beth Carvin and listen to her present, which was a super presentation on mentorship and mentorship programs. Brian Abramowitz turned up briefly. Brian sort of did a quick dive in on day two, did a presentation, shot back out to the airport in true dynamic fashion, but it was really fantastic. So good to see Brian and Beth as well. And again, thanks so much to the team at Acquire for a couple of great days. We did a show live as well on Monday afternoon, live from Acquire Inc.'s user conference, which actually was a really good show. So if you get a chance on the archive, check out episode 101, Live from Acquire. So we had a good time talking about analytics and organizational stuff. We dove into social a little bit, of course. I guess every conversation seems to take us there every now and again. So super time down at Acquire. So many, many thanks again for that. So, and then yesterday we did HR Happy Hour Europe for the first time. We debuted that show. So this is my third show in 4 days, so maybe that's why the guest is turned up missing. He's sick of me as well. But HR Happy Hour Europe yesterday was a ball. We did it in the afternoon in U.S. time, and this is a project in conjunction with our friends at JobSite, which is a UK-based careers and jobs portal site. With our friends who put that together, helped put it together, Felix Wetzel and Mervyn Dinnan from JobSite, and our guests were Amanda Height, who you'd know as Sexy Thinker on Twitter, and Amanda's fantastic, and even though, you know, she rightly hassled me a little bit for having to fly all the way around the world to come on the HR Happy Hour, and Scott Stratton, Unmarketing, was also a super, super guest, and he was on that show as well. So if you get a chance on that archive, check out HR Happy Hour Episode 1 Live from Europe as well. So, all right, that's my quick announcements. I'm going to quickly take a quick look. I know my friend Hank's not on Twitter, so he's not tweeting me where he is. I'm going to see if one of these two folks who are on the line, it might be Hank. So let's try line number two. Hi, area code 217. Who's this?
Hey, Ryan.
Dave, how are you, buddy? Okay, you're not Hank, so hang out with me for a minute. No, just hang out.
All right.
Hi, area code 205. Who's this?
Hey, it's Dawn.
Dawn, all right, John, you're up too. So right now it's you and me and Dave Ryan. My guest Hank Gilman has not turned up yet. So you've been conscripted into duty. So hang out with me for a few minutes while we try to track down our friend Hank.
You know, Steve, I've wanted to fire everybody at some point. So you know, maybe I could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you could. I'll tell you what. I did have some correspondence with Hank earlier in the week. I'm confident he'll turn up, so I'm not too worried about that. Hank's a good guy, and his book is actually quite interesting. And I read it a couple of weeks ago and sort of reread parts of it in this last week, You Can't Fire Everyone. And really the premise is more about the idea of accidental management, right? And Dave, you've seen this, Don as well, I'm sure, in your careers, the idea that we'll take a high-performing individual contributor, whether it's a technical role or it doesn't really matter what the type of role it is, but we take our best person at doing X and then we make them the manager of everybody else who does X, right? But frequently we don't equip that person with the tools, skills, the background information that he or she would really need to be successful in that job. And that's essentially what the book is about. And it's a story of about 20 years of Hank's, meanderings through the world of journalism, navigating the waters of management when he really never set out to be a manager. So it's an interesting story, and I'm sure it's something you guys have seen in your careers as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was journalism, because I was going to say that's a perfect example. Just because you're a good writer or reporter doesn't mean you're going to be a good editor, and it's the old Peter principle at some point.
Right. Yeah, no, it's definitely true. And the idea is once you get put into that managerial role, particularly when, whether it's journalism or another field or type of skill or background, right? Oftentimes it's your friends, right? The people you came up to through the ranks with, your buddies, the folks you went out to have a drink with on a Friday night. Now you're the boss, right? And so how do you deal with that? And how do you make that work when all of a sudden now you're the person in charge and not sort of the collegial drinking buddy anymore?
Well, I think it's really difficult on a lot of levels. I think you have to, I guess, reestablish boundaries on some levels. I also would think, though, in this kind of new millennium of management, more engagement is sometimes better than less engagement. It's some tricky waters to navigate. I think it also depends on the evolutionary stage your company's in. Definitely there are different ways that you manage a team of 20 or an employee base of 20 versus an employee base of 1,000. It's interesting, Steve, I've been teaching a change management class at DAXCO where I work, and we talk about this, I guess, conundrum, and there was some research. Google actually just dealt with the same issue. There was a great article, I think it was in the New York Times, I'm not sure, don't quote me on that. But Google did a 2.5-year study on its own employees to see what made a good Google boss.
Right.
Did you see that?
I did, yes.
To see what made a good Google boss, and they, didn't want to use case studies. They just wanted to look inside of Google because, Google's the alpha and omega, I'm certain, in their eyes. So they did all these studies, took 3 years, and ultimately they came up with 8 traits of a good Google boss. The number one trait of a good Google boss, based on their own internal research, which was full of a lot of technicians and engineers, was that my boss cared for me and that my boss was connected to me and was engaged to me. The very last of the top traits was technical expertise.
Right, exactly, right. Really sort of strengthening that point of finding the best technical person or the most highly skilled or really even productive person at whatever the task may be doesn't necessarily turn into the right move for managerial promotion, right? And super point. And Don, what else is really tough, right? Another tough sort of task. You talked about what's hard and what's tough. What's tough is becoming a guest on a live radio show when you had no intentions of being a guest. That's got to be tough as well.
I need some sort of spiff. I'll be ready for some gift card to, I don't know, Walmart or something, Steve.
No kidding. Let's Acquire Inc., our friends at Acquire. Let's come on. You help me out in episode 100. I think we have to do something for our accidental guests, right? The show is supposed to be about accidental management, and now we're talking about accidental live radio show guests. And I was, Don, I got to tell you, and Dave as well, who's been conscripted into duty, I was really well prepared. I had a lot of notes. I've read the book. I have it highlighted in many cases. So perhaps I'll just ask you guys the questions, you know, and see if you agree with some of the points that were in the book as well. So anyway, quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode 102. I'm Steve Bowes. You know, in a stunning reversal of events, actually sitting in with me right now is Dave Ryan, Dave the HR Czar, Don Burke, the Don HR Rocks. Don, what's up with that? Can we, like, maybe at some point, are we going to, like, drop the dash and everything and just go?
You know, my husband would welcome that. I got to tell you, it's good branding, folks. Once you learn how to say hard liquor, you never forget it, Steve. Hard liquor. But I tell you, some people have morphed the two into one name. Some people say Berklicka.
That's interesting. Okay, that's a good take on it. So we were doing the show, the HR Happy Hour Europe show, and we had Amanda Hyde on, who's really sort of ubiquitous, right, with her brand of sexy thinker. And one of the and Felix Wetzel was on as well. Felix is from Germany, and Felix had made a comment or two, and one of the listeners or the folks who was listening and tweeting commented about how sexy Felix's voice was, and so I immediately recommended Felix change his Twitter name to, like, Sexy Talker. You know, just go with the brand, and you can dominate that, you know, really pretty much forever after. So, well, guys, I appreciate you guys hanging out. You thought you were just kind of hanging out on pre-show. And so I'll welcome anyone else who wants to jump on board. It looks like we're kind of open season tonight. 646-378-1086. Please do call in and say hello. We'll talk about some of the topics that I did have prepared, because, quite frankly, you know, that's what I prepared for tonight. But as Don and Dave both are veteran and seasoned HR leaders, Dave, quite frankly, a little more veteran than Don. I hate to say that, Dave, but it's true.
It's true.
You've seen it all, too, as well. And you would sort of refer with some of the points here that made in the book. So one of the things, Dave, is that you? We're getting a lot of blowback there. Hang on.
I don't think so.
Okay. Don, what are you doing, Don? Come on.
I'm right here. Say again.
All right.
Thanks, Twits.
Yeah. I was getting a lot of heavy breathing coming in through the line. So maybe that was me, quite frankly. So,
you know, I think it was the veteran HR guy that was breathing heavy.
Yeah, easy. He's nervous, right? We put him on the spot. So, hey, one of the things I want to ask you about, one of the things that Hank talked about in the book, and let's see if you guys agree with, as a manager, right, he felt like one of the most important things was recruiting, right? Obviously, finding staff and getting the right talent into his organization to work for him and his department, his jobs. And he came to a quick conclusion that he's always recruiting. He refers to himself not just as a manager, but a 24/7 recruiter. And so, Don, I'll throw this to you first. Is that the kind of attitude you think is important in hiring managers that you work with and work in support? Is that the kind of thing you guys talk about? You should always be out there looking for talent?
Yeah, absolutely, positively. In this market, particularly I'm in the software industry, so finding qualified people who are .NET programmers, skilled technicians in a market where the supply and demand is just not in my favor. I think maybe even I tout that philosophy probably even more so to my hiring managers. Hey, where are you going to find the best customer service people? Well, it's going to be that waitress that just served you really well. Or it's going to be that person at the shoe store that served you really well. So you always have to be on the prowl and on the have your eyes open to different people throughout the course of just your everyday interaction that fill skill sets. I don't think that in this era of quick, swift change, where people have so many options in their career choices, for good or bad reason, leaving your company, you always have to be a 24/7 recruiter. Always have to be a 24/7 recruiter, no doubt.
Yeah, certainly important. And I think perhaps maybe one of the things as a new manager as well, you're not used to that. If you were sort of doing your individual contributor thing or worked on project teams or wherever you found yourself before you morphed into management, right, that idea. Now all of a sudden, not only do I have to sort of do my new job, manage this new staff, but I've also got to be on the prowl for keeping that pipeline of talent coming into my organization as well, that's got to be a little tough for a new manager.
Oh, it most definitely is. And I think what's even tougher is them letting go of their typical job skills. The things that they're used to doing as an individual contributor, they got to step out of that. They got to get out of being neck deep in the muck, and they've got to shift their focus into developing, mentoring, coaching, hiring, in some cases terminating. And that is a very difficult mental mind shift for anybody going from an individual contributor role into a leadership or management role. And quite frankly, some realize that they don't like it. And that's where a good HR team comes into play. You can help people discern their career paths, and you can help make people make good hiring choices regarding leadership as opposed to just a quick promotion from the most productive individual contributor.
Right. Let me, John, let me pause you there for 1 second. There are a couple of folks who have been trying to call in. I'm not sure if Hank's one of them yet. Our call-in number, again, 646-378-1086. After you call in, please press 1. So I know you want to come on board with us tonight as well, rather than me just hunt through the call list and try to figure out who might want to talk, other than Don and Dave, who I sort of called into last-minute duty. So, Dave, here's an interesting question I'll throw to you, and this was one of the themes as well I saw Hank write about, and it was a pretty interesting idea, is the importance of treating your star players differently than everybody else, essentially treating them better. And Hank told a story about basketball, which resonated with me certainly, and how back in the 50s and 60s, the coach of the Celtics, Red Auerbach, had essentially a different set of rules for Bill Russell than he had for the rest of the players. Sort of before there were the so-called Michael Jordan rules, there were the Bill Russell rules. And Dave, I'd love for you to comment a little bit about how you sort of look at that topic of treating your star players essentially better than other folks on the team.
I think it's kind of tricky. You probably should do that, but it shouldn't be so overt that it flies in the face of everyone else there. You know, I remember you love the sports analogies. I think Reggie Jackson was one of the first guys to stop riding the team bus and arrive via the limousine at the ballpark.
Right, and, yeah, sure.
You know, when he's knocking down the big bucks, that's okay, but, boy, that kind of takes away from the whole team aspect there, and he's not really kind of doing much to ingratiate himself with the rest of the folks on the team. So, you know, and as a manager, if you're giving somebody a few more perks or you're giving them a little more latitude or giving them the plum gigs, you got to be careful that you're not alienating the other people as well, though, because, you know, I'd rather have a bunch of good players than one great player.
Interesting point, Dave. Let me take a call right now. There's someone who wants to jump on board with us. Dave, thanks for that. Hi, area
sure.
code 513. You're on HR Happy Hour. Hello, area code 513. All right, fair enough. So, yeah, Dave, I'll leave 513 open. We're having a great night today. I think I'm going to attribute this all, quite frankly, to the departure recently of HR Minion. You know, she's walked away from the show, and it's all gone to pieces on me in the first night. It's horrible, horrible. So if you're listening,
that might have been part of the rapture too. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. Our guest got taken up in the rapture as well.
Could be.
So, this is HR Happy Hour again. We're just kind of winging it tonight. We're still trying to track down our guest Hank Gilman to talk about his book, which was called You Can't Fire Everyone. Which is, again, a really fun book, and I do recommend you checking it out. Dave Ryan is with us. Don Herdlicka, Berklicka, Don H.R. Rocks is with us as well. And we lost our caller on 513, so please do call back if you get the chance, and we'll bring you back on board. So, hey, Don, how about this one, right?
Oh, first of all, hey, Steve, I say discriminate with your good players.
Well, I'm good. Here, I got to follow up on that question. In the book, Hank talks about spending most of your time on your top talent, which seemed really counterintuitive to me. Because, right, as managers, we tend to spend a lot of time on you know the lower performing areas of our employee base, right, to try to bring them up to speed or coach them or do our performance improvement crap that we have to do.
Right.
But Hank really emphasized spending time, a lot of time, on your top talent and really thinking about them and working with them more. And that sort of is a corollary to what you just sort of expressed.
Yep, I say treat them like rock stars. First of all, hire right. Be sure you're hiring people, even if it's through some sort of, oh, I say this begrudgingly, subjective measures, to see if they're agile, to see if they can deal with change, to see if they're competitive. I mean, ask them, what did you do competitively growing up? What was your success with it? How do you feel if you aren't successful? How do you handle failure? Blah, blah, blah. Go through all of those sorts of things. Get A players on board, and your job as a manager or as an HR professional will be a lot easier because you just kind of let them do their thing, certainly with guidance and accountability. Make them feel like rock stars. And my whole thing is positive begets positive. The more rock stars you have in your organization, the more you will attract, particularly if you have a damn good referral program.
So I
do not like wasting my time for too long with underachievers. I love to coach. I love to mentor. I love to see people grow. And there's plenty of roles in my organization for people that don't have to be those A++++ players. But I don't deal with the F players for very long. So I say encourage your top guns, and hopefully some of that will rub off to some of your other performers who have the potential to be top guns.
Right, and some of that, Dawn, is also really important and applicable on the hiring side as well, right? Because especially in software, you're in the software business, right? But it's not really limited to the software business either, right? It's really lots of businesses today. It's hard to know exactly what you need that talent to do, right? You kind of have an idea of the important skill sets, the important cultural attributes that'll be a fit with your organization, but it can be difficult, particularly right in a technology business, to know specifically what you'll need someone to do 2 years down the road. And quite frankly, right, if you've ever seen, and we've all seen it a million times, those famous, you know, did you know videos that have that sort of thumping beat in the background with all the statistics about how much the world is changing. We
right.
know, particularly in technology, right, in technology, that a couple years down the road, many of the technical skills someone might have today won't matter anywhere at all tomorrow. So it's really more about, can I find people who are likely to adapt and adjust and quickly enough to meet those new skills? And so, you know, when you're doing your sort of evaluations of candidates and assessments, I mean, how do you look at something like that, something like adaptability and ability to sort of be agile and react quickly on an assessment side, particularly with someone you don't really know?
Well, it's not easy, and I think that there, frankly, where I'm at, there's a great amount of improvement that my team needs to do. I'm not too proud to say this is an area that I want us to be better at, because I do think that it can make or break any kind of good hiring practice in this new speed of this new norm, just like you said with the videos, with the thumping, you know, subwoofer in the background, talking about
right.
how communication is going forward. I think you have to measure this just like you would any other subjective measure. You ask for examples from their past, and you keep drilling down with follow-up questions until you get out of the subjective mode and you get into some sort of pattern-istic, is that a word? Some sort of way that you come up with something objectivity. Some objective way to see if that's something they can do. So I wish I had a magic bullet on how to do that better. I don't necessarily think assessments will get you there. I think the main thing that corporations have to do, and the HR function has to be the leaders of this, is you've got to get the DNA of your organization. You have to be able to pull your leadership and really determine what is that DNA that your particular company needs to find in outside candidates. That, to me, is more difficult in determining what that DNA is that you have to then find for in your search than actually asking questions in the interview process.
Dawn, thanks for that. Let me do a quick reset, and then we'll take another call. This is HR Happy Hour, episode 102. We're sort of talking about a book that I have read, and the author's not with us, which makes for an interesting discussion. Dawn Herdlicka-Burke is with us. It's Dawn HR Rocks from now. I can't say it. Dawn, I have a mental problem with you saying your name, and I've tried to say it now 30 times. And I can't.
That's okay.
I'm just going to call you Dawn. And Dave
That's
Ryan
good.
Is here as well. So, Dave, buddy, thanks for hanging out with us as well. Let's take a call on line number 5, area code 513. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, how's everybody doing? This is Benjamin McCall.
Ben, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Yourself?
Ben, you can't fire everyone. That's what I've heard. That's what we're talking about. So what are your thoughts? I mean,
I think everybody has a place, and I think Dave and Don raised some good points, and David brought up Bill Russell example earlier. I think another good example of dependent on your star players is kind of Jack Welch. If you look at the story of Jack Welch, when he started out at GE, he did not like it there, and he was about to leave, but he was considered a star player. So actually the culture he did not like, and because of the culture he wanted to leave. And there were people that were powerful enough to say, you know what, you can work outside the culture. We will
right.
allow you the thing that you're going to do outside of everyone else. And he had a lot of freedom. So it's kind of interesting to me to say how in all the books and how he talks about how he changed the culture, however, he was never a part of it. So I think when you talk about star players, regardless of how you treat them versus everybody else, you have to align it with performance and talk about it in the realm of performance. Because if you just talk about it in the realm of I'm supporting and subjecting my star players to special treatment just for because they're a star player, people aren't going to understand that. But if you tie it to performance of, you know what, they're doing what needs to be done and they're going above and beyond, what are you doing? And I think that's one of the main things that needs to be done. But you have to look at it. Is it to the detriment of the team or is it to the benefit of the team? So while you're spending time on this one or two or few star players, how is that tearing down the rest of the organization or building back up? I mean, you have to look at the whole. So there's some people to a certain extent you have to let go of, but you have to let them know that they're not stepping up. You know, if you just let go of them and you haven't talked to them and you haven't spent time with them to let them know where they need to be better and they don't know that they need to be better, but you're saying that they're not a star player, chances are they're not going to know why. So
yeah.
You have to be able to have those conversations or, I mean, pretty much you will never have a good team. It will be the luck of the star players that join your team that make you look good rather than your development ability to make your team better or individuals regardless.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, you know, Ben, you kind of make. Because in a certain market, competing for a certain talent pools, the law of averages might say, unless you somehow have cracked the code of interviewing and assessment or perhaps your work environment is just so much superior to your other sort of competitors in your space or you can just pay a lot more, right? That's the whole sort of baseball analogy, again, with, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox now can – well, they get all the best players because they can pay them, right, the most. And so that's how it works. But chances are you're going to have similar, in broad strokes, similar talent levels across your organization than the companies you're competing with, right? And so the companies that can do the best job of alignment and development are the ones who will really win, not necessarily the ones who recruit the best, because we're all recruiting out of that same talent pool.
Oh, yeah, and final point around star players is are those star players going to be the star players for the rest of your career or the rest of your team's career or the rest of the company's career? Probably not. So, you know, not only aligning with the recruitment, you have to be able to identify people that are the next star players instead of just relying on the ones that you have for the now.
Right. Cool, Ben. Hey, thanks, man. Hang out with us if you can. We have kind of an open show tonight. Our guest has failed to turn up, so I appreciate the call, and thanks for hanging out with us for a while.
No problem.
Cool. So, HR Happy Hour. I'm Steve Bowes. We're hanging out with Ben McCall's with us, Dave Ryan's with us. I believe we've lost Don, so Don, if you want to get back on board, please call back in. And me. So this is the HR Happy Hour talking about hiring, firing, star players, and such. I want to get into sort of some of the firing discussion as well. So we had some interesting notes about that from the book. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. If you do call in, please press 1, and I will bring your line up right away. Our Twitter hashtag, of course, HR Happy Hour, and we're trying to keep an eye on that as well. So let's see. Meanwhile, let's talk about the firing side of things, right? Because we talked about hiring for a while. I want to talk about firing. So one of the things in Hank's book, he talked about sort of, you know, firing quickly, right? So, you know, you can kind of tell right away that someone's not going to work out, someone's not really, you know, a fit or just isn't performing right. And so, Ben, you sort of talked a little bit about sort of giving people a chance. So I wonder if you could maybe just comment a little bit about the benefit to sort of letting someone know really quickly that they're not going to work out, because chances are we can't really turn that around and we're doing them a favor. There's a school of thought that says we're doing someone a favor by letting them know as quickly as possible that they're really in the wrong place, versus trying to spend a year or more sort of developing them, and if it fails, they've sort of wasted a year or more of their professional life. So maybe you could just share a couple thoughts about that.
Well, I think that's an interesting, I mean, I think if we can't spend all the time on positive, but we also can't spend all the time on negative. So saying that we can't spend time on developing somebody who may be not performing a certain way is just like we can't spend time on people who are performing, but we ignore them and allow them to do what they need to do. So you had kind of talked in the beginning, kind of referencing the book of you know, do we let people go quickly? Do we let them go based off certain things? I think that you give, as long as you have the expectations in place, and also another thing you mentioned earlier was if you rise to a manager level around your peers, how do you deal with it? And I think it's just being honest. You know, I mean, you were reporting to one other person, now you're reporting to me. I know they had a certain level of expectations. Here's my expectations around your role and what we are going to do from this point on, and these are the expectations. Do you agree or do you disagree? Because there's a contract that is a kind of an unsaid, unwritten contract that's made. So around bad performance or how long you keep someone, I think it depends on what they're doing and what you're doing. Because bad performance is not always on the employee or the person that is being perceived to not be performing well. It could be the environment. It could be the expectations. It could be unrealistic or realistic. I think the manager has to help guide the person. So as long as the environment is right, where you start out with good expectations, whether you're a new manager of, you know, kind of from the Kevin Eckelberry or if you have been a manager, I think you're honest, you set expectations, you meet with them regularly, so because I don't think anybody wants to have their rating be a surprise by the time they get to the performance review, so you set times that you meet with someone so they won't be surprised. And if they are, it's either telling you that you're not doing the right things or they're just an idiot, you know, an
right.
idiot.
Yeah. So, right. So, you know, really what you're kind of suggesting is if you just kind of throw people out there, you throw them out into the ocean, if you will, and see if they sink or swim, that decision, whether or not they're going to sink or swim, you can make that really quickly because you're not really investing anything, really much of your own sort of managerial time, attention, organizational capital in the person. You're just saying, get out there, hopefully you'll succeed, and hopefully if we throw enough people in the ocean, enough of them will succeed, they'll swim back to the boat, right, and we'll have the kind of team we want. But otherwise, you know, it's going to take sort of time and effort and real sort of dedication to try to bring those people along. And there's definitely, you know, different places I know I've worked that have had the sort of the former attitude about things. We're just going to toss you out there, and hopefully enough of you will survive. But it's interesting how different organizations and different managers approach that a little differently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let me do a quick reset one more time. It's HR Happy Hour. We're talking about hiring and firing, some organizational sort of dynamic stuff. Ben McCall is here. Dave is still with us, right, Dave, Ryan? I think you're still out there.
Still here, Steve.
Hanging out, trying to tweet and talk at the same time, which I'm proud of you.
It's tough. It's tough, buddy.
And I tell you what, it is. And then I apologize a second ago. I got a little distracted. I got like one of those emergency texts. You know, some of you, people text you, right, with the emergency code. And it wasn't really an emergency, right? It was quite not an emergency, but it distracted me for, you know, a minute while I had to assess the level of emergency, which was quite minimal, frankly. So, we're hanging out. 646-378-1086. Press 1. If you want to come on board, there's a few folks on the line as well besides Dave and Ben. If any of you guys want to come on board and ask a question, make a comment, or just jump into the conversation tonight, please, please, please press 1 so I can open up your line. Otherwise, I'm just sort of guessing who you are. So thanks for that. So, hey, another interesting thing I saw about in the book and I read about was sort of the situation for new management? Maybe you've come from the outside, or maybe you were newly promoted, or you've gone to a new company and you're walking into a managerial situation you're unfamiliar with. And Hank has a pretty funny story in the book where he talks about a new magazine he was leading up at the time from the editorial perspective, and he talks about walking into that first staff meeting and he felt like he was walking into the cantina scene, right, in Star Wars, right, and he was just really not enthused or excited and felt like the level of talent that he was dealing with, was not going to be up to par to get accomplished what they needed to get accomplished, or specifically what he needed to get accomplished, you know, in this leadership role. So, you know, Dave, I'll throw it to you. Like, you know, what kinds of advice, have you ever walked into a situation where you inherited a team maybe, or inherited some direct reports or just some staff that you thought, oh my God, I can't believe what I've just walked into? And then what do you do if you've ever experienced that?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I drink, Steve. That's a good outlet for me.
You clean house? Do you write, I mean, you come through like Genghis Khan and just wipe the slate clean and start over?
I'm kind of slow to do that sometimes, to clean house, because I think that the aftermath of that is sometimes, you know, and I've spent most of my time in smaller organizations, not in large organizations. So from my experience, that's not necessarily a good tactic, because we still have to do what we do. So you
right.
gotta, you know, if it's a magazine, you still gotta put something out, even if it's not very good.
Well, right, and I think that's part of the title of the book, right? You can't fire everyone because you can't, right? If
so,
you do,
yeah,
there are no donuts, right, Dave?
That's right. You know, nobody will eat the donuts. So
no one will make
them.
Yeah, that'll be a problem.
That's right. I haven't really worked in a major corporation, so I don't know what that's like. I know they do have they do come in and have the bloodlettings and just let, you know, literally hundreds of, if not thousands of people go from time to time. I think that's more about right-sizing or downsizing. But in terms of, a unit or something like that, if you feel like you need to get everybody, let everybody go, and you've got support to get it staffed quickly, I guess that's okay.
Right.
But I haven't experienced that because I haven't worked in that realm myself.
Right.
Go
ahead, Ben.
I was saying when Dave was talking, or you guys are talking about this, I'm thinking about a scene from Mad Men. Has anybody ever seen the show Mad Men on AMC?
Absolutely, yeah.
It makes me think of when staff was about to be sold to the European firm, and they created their own firm and basically left, and the deal was done in the water. It's like they were letting go of so many people, they got tired of it, so they created their own firm and basically left the company that this larger firm in Europe was trying to buy. So the deal basically got shot and they lost all their money. But it makes me think, like, you could let go of people, but are you letting go of your most important product and service? You know, you may have a product and service that you're selling, but are you letting go of your most important product and service, even though they may be not that great performers?
Right.
They may
right.
be really their job is sustaining what they do, but they may not do more, but they're really good at the level of what they're doing. They're fully comfortable. So in my mindset, I also think of that as some people can have performance evaluations and set an incremental goals that they build up to, but some people I don't think it makes sense for. You know, if someone's happy in what they're doing and you're comfortable with their work and you've had conversations around that, then you can keep them. But if they're just not performing at their job that they're supposed to be doing, and it's comfortable for them and for you to stay doing what they're doing, then, you know, that's an interesting dilemma. But I don't agree you can let go with everybody. Sometimes you got to deal with what you got, at least for a while, especially if you're a new manager and don't know enough about what everybody's doing yet.
Yeah, no, Ben, super point. I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think another thing where it's sort of economically possible, and Hank talks about this a lot in the book, and it does resonate with me certainly, especially lately, but he talks specifically about the idea of, like, you kind of know, right, whether it's a group you're inheriting or a group you're working with for a while or you've been elevated to a managerial position and you spent a little bit of time sort of getting the lay of the land, but you can kind of know. You kind of know the folks that aren't going to work out, whether they're just not up to speed or their skills haven't evolved to keep pace with changes in the industry or the technology, or there's just they're just not a fit, and you know that it's just not going to work out, that the best thing you can do for them is let them know as quickly as possible, give them lots of opportunity to figure out what their next move might be. You know, almost like he talked about sort of almost like a 90-day warning, but he even gave examples where he gave people almost up to a whole year to sort of sort out, what, you know, knowing that you really need to figure out what you're going to do next because this isn't working out for us here. And I think over time that sort of, if it's economically possible anyway, really kind of strengthens the employer sort of brand and the employer position in the marketplace, knowing it's even to the people it's letting go, it's sort of trying as best they can to do right by them. I think that's pretty important as well. Cool. So let's sort of pivot a little bit. Another sort of line of discussion that we were going to talk about tonight, and I'll sort of talk about with you, is you guys who or anyone else on Twitter or anyone else who wants to call in and talk about it, was the idea of appearances and the real importance once you're sort of elevated into a managerial position or a leadership position of the appearances, like how you behave, what you do, how you react, even things as silly as your body language or the expressions on your face, how really important they are, and how the people who are working for you are sort of looking at you and taking cues from some of those very, very subtle things. And, you know, Ben, I'll throw this to you. I mean, that's got to be something really hard for a new manager to really warm up to, the fact that you almost feel like you've got to be on your game all the time because somebody is always watching you. That's got to be a pretty tough adjustment, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I don't think everybody really realizes it. You know, to a certain extent, many people who become managers, whether they're promoted or kind of fall into it, become because of their current skill rather than their future skill for the abilities of being a manager. So and what many people don't realize as employees when they're becoming managers or when they're looking at their bosses as managers, is that, you know, it's more than just the job. It's more than just the technical expertise, as Don, when she was referencing the Google aspect. It's about understanding not only the job and what you have to do for the business and the money and the margins, but also the people, you know, how it works. And, you know, everybody's different. If you got five people on the team, you're not going to have five supporters all the time. You're going to have people that are, you know, disenchanted, that are ready, you know, tired of the culture of the organization, waiting for you to leave, you know,
right,
looking at everything you do, how you treat each individual. So not being aware of that, especially if you're not used to it, you know, unknowingly, you could do some things to really hurt not only their perspective of you, but also, you know, I mean, people looking at your whole team as a whole. So that is definitely a tough thing. And to me, it's like I always tell people when I do my leadership training is they're always going to operational training, technical training, and they always want to get that. But people don't realize that sometimes the soft skill stuff that we don't have practice at, that's the operational side of people. And if you don't know that, then, I mean, to a certain extent, you could be dead in the water. So
yeah,
you got to be able to realize that when you're treating people certain ways, that could be perceived or translated completely different by another person. You know, you joking around, it's, you know, not a joke to somebody else. So
yeah, Ben, I think those are super points, and really it resonated with me as well when I was reading those parts of the book. I realized it lately in the last year or so. You know, certain just reactions, comments, whether even subtle things like whether or not you declined a meeting, right, that maybe you were an optional attendee for, and then you heard about it a few days later. Well, why weren't you at that meeting? What's the problem? Is this project not – are we not doing this project anymore? You know, those kinds of things, the idea that, boy, every little thing you do is – or not always, but often anyway, right? And that can be a rude awakening, right, for people. And I think one of the sort of transition steps into management that – until you've been through it, it's hard for even to be sort of trained on that as well. I mean, you can tell someone, boy, this is really important how you act and how you carry yourself. And your attitude and your, but still, just until someone, it's almost like your kid, right? The way your kid looks at you all the time for cues about your mood and how you're feeling and sort of reactions to what they're doing as well, right? It's the same kind of
thing.
Oh,
yeah. I have to say one thing. Don tweeted out, she's like, keeping it rolling without scheduled guests, hard to do, but he speeds it up every up to the challenge.
Well, thank you, Don. That's super feedback, and I appreciate you hanging out with us as well. So, we got about 15 more minutes to go in the show, and I do really, really appreciate Ben and Dave and Don for sticking with us tonight and sort of rolling with me as well. I do really, really appreciate you guys and the folks hanging out with us on the back channel, too. Let's take another call. Someone wants to jump on board.
Yay.
Hi, area code 786. Hello?
Mark 2.
Hey, Steve, it's John Nicolasian in Miami.
Johnny, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm giving the heat game up for this.
Go ahead, John.
I said I'm giving the heat game up for this?
Yeah, no kidding.
Me.
Shocking. I have it on mute, though. I'm walking over to it right now. Looks like it's on a commercial.
I'm knee-deep in diapers and bottles. Not that Frank Zupan cares about that, but
that's good stuff, man.
I had to catch up on the Twitter stream, and I was like, oh, my God, the guy's not here. What's going on? Oh, my God.
Yeah, we lost our guest again. It's shocking, John. This is like two times in the last 2 months.
I don't
know, man. I've got to figure out some kind of a better situation here for getting that organized. But.
Well, you know, it's funny. I did a little brief reading and catching up, and I had a client visit today, and one of the things that they were talking about, it was an interesting client here in South Florida, a property management company, and they had kind of found some entrepreneurial ways. But they were talking to me about their recruiting process and their retention process, and one of the things that was interesting was this. He had the book Top Grading. I know if you've seen it, it's this whole thing about A players and B players and C players and, you know,
right.
Fire your C players. And he looked at me, and this was the CFO, and he said, I can't hire C players, but I can't hire F players either, so it takes me a lot longer to hire them, but I don't have this problem with turnover. I don't have this problem with team. I don't have this problem with staff because I just take a lot longer on the front end to hire.
Right.
As a former recruiter, I was like screaming, like, dude, you have 25 open recs on the board. This is why you're not hiring fast enough and your people are burning out. But after sitting there and going through his culture and learning about it, I just thought it was very interesting to see. And it was kind of an interesting juxtaposition of what you said earlier about how you can't fire everybody, but you know, you can't hire everybody just as fast either. You really got to find a way to strike that balance.
Right, and John, and that takes a real understanding of your organization and your business, right, to know making that trade-off between I'm willing to keep a given position or a set of positions open 6 months, 9 months, however long I think it's going to take. I'm willing to make that trade-off versus filling the role with someone who's not right, and what's the risk associated with that, and what's the sort of downstream impact if I make that mistake, right? And that often maybe is worse than leaving the job open, it sounds like, at least in this example.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of guts, and I'm being polite because it's a family show. But you know what I mean, intestinal fortitude, that's the word.
Yeah, no doubt. So everything else going all right, John?
Everything's good down here in South Florida. You know, we're one win away from I'm one win away from getting some cigars from Charlie Judy. So I figured, you know, I'll just use this to call out and take the wheels off the wagon and say, you know, Charlie may be sending me some cigars.
Right.
And I'll take all comers from Dallas if we make it.
Yeah, so I was in Dallas the last couple of days. I was all home Sunday through Tuesday. I was in Dallas, and I got the chance to watch. We weren't at the game, but we were in Fort Worth. I keep forgetting Dallas. I keep saying Dallas. We were actually in Fort Worth, but we got to watch the Mavs game on Monday night with most of the Acquire crew right in town, and that was real fun. It was that great game that went into overtime, and Nowitzki just went crazy and.
Yeah.
Fourth quarter and overtime, they won the game. So that was really exciting. So, yeah, I'm an NBA guy as well, so it should be a really good finals. Hopefully Miami will get through, and we'll see Dallas-Miami in the next couple of weeks. So that'll be good stuff.
That'll be great stuff.
All right, man. John, thank you so much, man. Hang out with
no
us
problem.
If you can. I know you're doing the diaper duty tonight, and we appreciate you we appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to call in and hang out with us as well. So,
I love you guys. No worries.
Hey, thanks, John. HR Happy Hour. So we're rolling here, doing it unscripted, more or less, without our guests. But we've had some great folks call in and participate. Again, there's still a few more minutes for you to jump on board if you care to. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 after you connect, and we'll get you on board in the last few minutes of the show. So Dave Ryan's still with us, I believe. Ben McCall's with us. John is hanging out. Johnny Nick, Cigar SPHR is hanging out as well. And so I'll just throw out, guys, and I'll throw this first one to you, Dave. There's a whole part of the sort of idea in this book that I've read and I was planning on talking about tonight, but you still, you know, it's not really specific to the book, and you don't really need to have read the book to sort of comment on this, but this idea of sort of more enlightened management going forward, and one of the things Hank talked about in the book, and I'd love for you to comment about, is the importance for managers of basically not forcing employees to abandon their families. And one of the specific things, he talks about a number of things, you know, that managers really need to be cognizant of, in terms of this sort of hyper-connected, always-on age. But one of the things he specifically talks about is don't send emails to your staff, you know, at 11:30 p.m. or at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning, because it just sends out the wrong kind of message, and the staff starts to think, oh, my God, if I'm not answering email at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, maybe I'm going to be in trouble. So do you ever run into anything like that? And what is your sense if you had an employee or a group come to you and think, boy, you know, I've got a manager who's just killing me, who expects me to be, you know, answering emails at midnight on Saturday, and your thoughts on that?
I think about that, and I think about smartphones and the way that we've connected people now. 24/7, and I'm not sure where Department of Labor is on this, but one can make the case that if you're doing that all the time, that they never have any time off, i.e., they never have any vacation time, they never have any paid time off, and if you ever get crossways with them, then you may have a potential liability with that. That's one aspect. The other aspect is that doesn't make a real nice working environment when your boss is texting you at 2:30 in the morning wanting to know where that report is, even if it is late, you know?
Right.
Even if there's a time and a place for that. And I think you probably need to restrict work hours to messages to work hours unless it's something really important, you know, just like you were saying, you got a DM from somebody that I'll let you to believe that it was like fairly important, and it really wasn't.
Right. And by the way, let me just comment on that, if I may, Dave. I got accused on Twitter of having a beeper or talking about a beeper. It wasn't a beeper. It was a text message. So let's just be very clear. You know, it was a text message, not a beeper. I don't have a beeper. It's just I want to nip that rumor in the bud. But Dave, I think you're absolutely
sorry.
Dave, you're commenting on sort of echoes some of the things that Hank talked about in the book, and I think is a real danger, right, for organizations and managers. Ben, maybe your thoughts. You're always on. I know you have a young family, so you're finding time wherever you can to get stuff done, I'm sure, right, in a busy job. So what are your thoughts about, man, we always seem to be working all the time, and your perspective on that, especially for new managers?
You know, I think it's very easy, like Dave mentioned. I mean, there's definitely, to a certain extent, a liability, but there's also a mindset around it. So if someone's not in the mindset of knowing that, you know, here are my parameters, and I know the parameters of my boss or the context of what my boss is working in, then I can quickly tell if they're sending me an email at 4 a.m. on a Saturday, chances are, if I know the boss, they're not expecting me to reply to them then, unless it's something, the context of the message is really important, or they leave me a voicemail message. The first thing I thought of when it was mentioned, I was like, you know, tell that to my executive team. Tell that to my CEO when he calls or leaves a message.
Right,
I mean,
right.
But I know that they're not expecting, like maybe during the week, yeah. And I also think it depends on the level and the responsibility of the person that's in, regardless of new manager or not. But I do agree that does set some type of precedence. It does say to someone, like, what are the true expectations? I tell you that you have your free time, spend time with your family, go on vacation, but if I send you messages on your vacation, what is that telling me? And I think there's got to be a comfort level between the new manager
right.
And the people
Right, and I think and I think another part of this, Ben, would be the whether it's a new manager or just an existing organizational sort of structure is you know what, if I send you an email at 11 o'clock on Thursday and I sort of am anticipating I'm going to get an answer, I'm not going to like get up in your grill at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday when you tell me I want to go to the third grade dance recital and see my kid, right? I mean, I think there's some of that at play as well.
Yeah, and there's got to be some flexibility. So, I know the autonomy of my job. And I am always on. And to a certain extent, I was actually thinking about it today. It's like, if I'm doing a lot of this work and I am being expected certain things, there better be some reward. It's not just a all for nothing.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, time with just being sent. You got to be careful of that.
Ben, thanks for that. We got a couple more folks who want to try to jump on board. We have 5 minutes left in the show, so let's quickly try to take these last couple of calls. Let's go to area code 617. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, who's this?
It's Shane Granger from Australia.
Shane, how are you? Thanks for calling from Australia.
Yeah, very good, very good. It was a very operational show, so I thought I'd get involved today.
Hey, please do. You got about 3 minutes left, so what's on your mind?
First of all, I just want to say one thing. With Dawn, a lot of great stuff there, but with American unemployment at 9%, look, it's not a war on talent, it's a war on cost. Come down to Australia where it's 5% and lowering, and that's a war on talent. So I think the American dialogue's a little bit strange for me.
I love how Shane drops in and drops the bomb on us. I love it. Good job, man.
I'm probably doing this the right way, but anyway, we'll keep going. I also worry about job clarity. I think, and Ben brought up some great stuff. When someone takes on a managerial role, and I've spent about half of my 9 years in workforce planning in technical, IT, software companies.
Sure.
So a lot of people got sort of upgraded to the managerial spot without that operational people management skill set and just flunked out. I thought that was a great comment.
Yeah, no doubt. I see it all. I've seen it all the time as well, particularly from the consulting side of things. Consultants who are sort of individual experts in one specific type of tool or technology or some sort of developer, right? And they get put in charge of projects or a bunch of people, and it's just a massive flame out.
Well, yeah, it really falls apart. And it falls apart very quickly. And I think because their managers are just sort of I listened to a great talk by a guy called John Davidson, who used to run Contiki, which was a New Zealand company in Europe, started out in Europe. And he always used to say about the guys who used to run his buses, and we're talking about the 60s and 70s, he used to throw them a piece of meat. And if they took that piece of meat, he used to throw them another piece of meat. So he used to quietly build up their skills by simply giving them more responsibility, but in incremental components. That was his sort of way of doing it. What happens with technology, because it's moving so fast, is you kind of move someone out of something where they have very little responsibility over, say, core code or something. You put them into managing 10 people, prima donnas, most of them, who are managing that core code, and they fall apart very quickly. So you're not incrementally building up their experience and their knowledge. You just throw them straight into the deep end. So yeah, that's often a problem with, and that's where operations and HR don't talk to each other, I think.
Shane, I want to stop you right there. We're about maybe 2 minutes left to go in the show. I have one more person who wants to get on board before we wrap up. I really appreciate you taking the time to call in from Australia. Next time I need you to call in just a little bit sooner, right, in the show. So if you can, be fantastic. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, Shane, thank you so much. Let's go to our last call of the night, area code 815. How are you tonight?
Good, Steve. John Jorgensen.
John, what's up, buddy? You got about 1 minute.
I was just going to point out that the 24/7 isn't that, horribly new. I'm back in a few jobs back. I was a HR manager for a large Fortune 100 factory, and I had one of those beepers that you were so badly denying you ever had. I had to take with me everywhere, including on vacation. But that's the joy of being exempt. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Isn't.
Yeah, this, I think the point, and I think that's a fair point, John, I think sort of the subtle thing is sort of the subtle expectation setting it means when you're expecting replies from staff, and not in emergency situations, right? We're talking about sort of just normal course of business kind of situations at incredibly strange hours, weekends, and whatnot. So, but I do know what you mean. So, John, thanks so much for hanging out with us. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. We've got about 30 seconds to go. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in tonight. John, Ben, John, Dave, of course, Shane from Australia, really appreciate it. We lost our guest tonight, but we still had you, so really thank you so much. We'll see you next time on HR Happy Hour. Anybody who's on the line can hang out for after show if you want for a few minutes. And thank you so much, and we'll see you next week on the HR Happy Hour. Good night, everyone.
You will never guess who was the sponsor of this episode of HR Happy Hour. You ready? You got it? Acquire, leading provider, workforce planning, analytic solutions, now, compensation planning, designed to make it easy for line managers to do compensation planning. Hear that, line managers? Easy. I know that's what you wanted to hear. Learn more, acquireinc.com/comp.
All right, thanks, everybody. Wow, that was another interesting show with no guest. This is happening too often for my taste, but I really appreciate everybody sort of pitching in tonight. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem.
Come on, Shauna.
Yeah, right. It's good. Good stuff. So I'll have to figure out what happened to my guy, Hank. It was a really good book, too. It was going to be a great show tonight. I was ready. So we'll see what happens.
Steve, have you thought about a binding contract as opposed to this at-will appearance thing that you're working
on? I'll tell
you
what, the problem is it's a problem with all unpaid work, right, Frank? You know, you get what you pay for.
Send him a coffee cup, pal.
I guess, man. I heard from him on probably Tuesday. You know, I confirmed it. I sent a mail over the weekend probably and just confirmed and, you know, it's tough sometimes, but, you know, do what you can do.
Maybe you got an email or a call at 4 a.m. this morning.
Yeah, maybe he did. Maybe he did. I mean, this guy is a super book, and the guy's got a really kind of, at least in journalism circles, kind of one of those blue-chip kind of resumes, you know, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, Fortune Magazine. So, and it was a funny book, a lot of sports analogies in there, and just a pretty good, interesting kind of story. So, well, you know, we'll see that's what happens, right? We'll just roll with it. We ran out of time at the end of the show. Everybody, you know, the show will get back under control next week because we're actually going to have Sidon going to guest host and Shauna will sit in with them. So I didn't get a chance to announce that on the live stream, but that's going to happen next week because I'm going to be traveling again and can't do the show next week. So Sidon and Shauna will be doing the show. And I think it's going to be a LinkedIn show. It's going to be all about LinkedIn. So that should be fun. But not just the boring part of it, you know, the interesting part of it. Like who should be scared of LinkedIn is sort of the angle we're going to go after. So
everyone.
Yeah, exactly, right? Companies, yeah. Software vendors. I think there's a lot of people who should be scared, you know.
I actually had the heartfelt hurt feeling, kind of like when I had with Google, my financial person, and when Google was offered at $90 of the IPO, they told me to do it, and I was like, I wasn't too sure because, you know, then ads weren't a big thing, and I was going to max out a card, and I'm very sad, and I'm probably sad about LinkedIn, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, right.
I haven't even tracked it. What did it close at today?
I have to look it up. I don't know. But
I have no idea.
It doubled in valuation after, like, the first couple days.
It dropped a little, right, because the market sort of dropped, right? But I haven't been following it that close to myself, but.
My wife's in private wealth management, and she has access to some of the IPOs for her clients here in Miami. And she had a client that they had asked for a 1 million share allocation. I mean, this is big money. And he only got 200 shares. Her division of Morgan Stanley only got 700 shares of the IPO. And he got 200, and then they have a bank down in South America. I don't remember, but one of the banks, one of the institutional investors got the other shares. And this guy, he flipped it. He got in, and he flipped it at 90. So,
wow.
You know, he got it at the 45, and boom, he was out. And I was just like, there's only 200 shares. The thing was mad.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Let me ask you a question. Should you be saying that on recording? Is that okay?
It's already done.
Yeah, we won't get...
Ben, don't worry. No one's listening. No one's going to hear this. We're fine. Believe me.
Only six or seven of us. LinkedIn closed at 86:37 today.
Ah, interesting.
I think a pretty considerable portion of their ownership is employee as well. They had a... If you looked at the breakout of their offering, they had a pretty good group. What, they've got 11 or 1,200 employees, and I think they had a pretty solid option package in place.
Right. I mean, don't you sort of, like, worry, though, like, people in our space can't really fairly assess it? Because people like us are not the normal, right, or Frank or myself or other people. We're on LinkedIn 10 times a day, maybe, but the average LinkedIn person drops in once every 3 months, if that.
Yeah, they're working on that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I can't take them seriously when they say they're not a job board. And I'm surprised we haven't started kind of comparing them to the ladders yet, because they charge on both sides. They charge you to have a premium user account, and they charge you for a recruiter seat. So how are these guys – I bet you the ladders – and not to bash on the ladders, but it's just fun to do – I bet you the ladders is probably kicking themselves in the ass going, man, we should have charged our clients. We missed the boat.
See, but I guess maybe I don't understand it completely. I get a lot out of LinkedIn as far as not paying, so I wonder why people pay and what added benefit they get, because I know people who pay and the exact same things they do, I just do with less access. I mean, I guess maybe I just don't get it. I don't get how it could be valued so high. I'm wondering how the business model is going to work down the road. I mean, I could see Google at least trying to work, and do, but I'm really wondering how the business model is going to work down the road for LinkedIn. The ladders is just basically, well, I'm not. The ladders is a funny joke to me.
How do you really
feel interesting,
that?
That's an interesting point, though, John. In some respects, you're right, but remember that that's a premium level of service, and most of their 100 million profiles are free profiles. Very few of them are paid profiles on LinkedIn, very few. And I frankly don't understand the concept of the paid profile either. I don't get that part. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, I paid because I wanted to have the access and to see other, you know, they give you more bells and whistles. But, you know, you read Glenn's blog, you know, he's putting that stuff out there for free on how to see this stuff. Really, Ben, it comes down to time. How much time do you have to sit there and open up multiple windows and do your Google searches on crap that LinkedIn won't show you? You can do it. But if you pay for it, you're just going to get them to do it.
I have a recruiter seat license on the recruiting side. I'm talking about the individual profile side. Yeah, I have a recruiter seat, and that's where most of LinkedIn's revenue is coming from, by the way. They announced that a week before the IPO, that the primary source of their revenue was corporate recruiting seat licenses.
Yeah,
right. They did say.
What are they, like,
and
about $5,000?
That'll continue to grow.
Is that like about a $5,000 buy, Frank? Do you even know, or is it more than that?
I do know, and it's around that range depending on what you negotiate.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. And again, I'm hoping the guys are going to talk about this next week. Jason is pretty tight with folks at LinkedIn, so we're going to hopefully have some LinkedIn representation on the show. But one of the things that was interesting to me, it was a CNBC, maybe, I think it was a CNBC clip I saw on the web with one of the one of the folks from one of the investment houses somewhere talking about the IPO. It was right around when it came out, and And so the host asked him, well, you know, what's LinkedIn going to do with all this cash and all this you know, valued stock? You know, what are they going to do? And the host asked the guy, well, will they go after Monster? Will they go buy Monster now? And the sort of analyst guy says, no, I don't think so, because LinkedIn will tell you Monster's the old way, right? That's the Web 1.0 kind of way. He goes, we're the new way. He goes, well, what I think would be interesting is if they go after a big talent management vendor, like a Taleo or SuccessFactors or somebody in that space, you know, with all that sort of workforce and career data and skills data, and, you know, you put the right front end up on that, you know, or embed it somehow more deeply into some of these talent management applications, that would be a more interesting story, and maybe not a real valuable one necessarily, but at least one that could theoretically make a splash in some of the markets that we look after. I don't know, though. So it should be good conversation. So that'll be next week, and the week after that, I'm not sure what I have going on. I'll have to figure that out. But June 16th, the HR Happy Hour goes to Toronto, Canada. We're going to be doing the show from the offices of our friends at Ripple up in Toronto. So that will be fun.
Sweet.
They tell me some interesting things are coming along, so we'll look forward to talking with them about that stuff. And so, I don't know, I guess any last words for anybody before we sign it off for tonight and go watch the rest of the basketball game?
Go Heat.
Nice. Under up by four.
Peace
out.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate John, Frank, who else is with us, Dave, Ben, everybody, Don, Shane from Australia who called in tonight. Really appreciate all the support for helping me out in a bind, and thanks so much. And we'll see you next week on the HR Happy Hour show. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.